Campus FM presents Theatre Traffic, a series of discussions organised by students of Theatre Studies in the Mediterranean Institute, coordinated by Dr. Vicky Ann Cremona.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the next discussion of Theatre Traffic. Today we'll be discussing scenography. And we also have quite a lot of drawings by the designers who are invited here today. We have Peter Howard and Adrian Marmor, and we also have Joe Gallia, who will be turning up a bit later on. Who would like to start? We'll start with the first question. Anyone who has any questions, you just go ahead. Tell Arthur, he's got the microphone. And we'll start with Adrian. With reference to these drawings that we have here, can you explain the method that you use when coming up with a design for one of your productions?
Okay, how long is the answer to this?
As long as you want.
Okay. Okay, well, rather than saying a few words, I'll say a bit more than a few words, no? Traditionally, as you know, theatre design would have been quite a straightforward exercise. It would be mainly coming up with a set to literally set your play, and therefore traditionally you would get a theatre stocking sets which belong to a particular play. This was especially the case in opera, where you'd get, even our theatre had particular sets which belonged to, for example, to Tosca. And therefore, when a company came from abroad, they would roll out the Tosca scenery, complete with the chapel and the rays of light, etc., etc. And whichever company came, they would still use the same set of scenery. Today, it's totally different. So a little answer to that is, I remember when I started out, maybe that was 24 years ago, I was always asked to interpret sets to fit the script, and therefore if they asked for a ballroom, you had to give a ballroom, or if you were asked for a forest, you painted a forest. With other plays, which is what I try to show in maybe these here, it becomes increasingly important, especially in theatre, to interpret, one, first to read the script, second to discuss with your director what he wants to do with the play. Again, today drama's a bit different to what it was previous. So you might want to have a set which emphasizes a particular trait, a particular feeling. I don't know if you want me to be specific or not. I can just do one, so I won't take a long time. Okay, that's... Can you hear? Okay. That's a play... These are all recent... Well, that's a recent one that's last year, a year ago. It was a play, it was a Maltese play at the Manuel, which was set in a particular place. It was a Maltese house in Hamrun at a particular period. However, we wanted to give a bit of a different interpretation, so, or a bit of a more open interpretation. So I chose an element which I would use for the whole set. First of all, it was one set but had to change for different scenes. I chose the Maltese Persiana, which is a Maltese louvered window.
Yeah.
So I created these five large louvered windows which opened and closed. The play was all about a very intimate situation in a family. It was all about gossip. It was all about very close family relations. It was very Maltese. And therefore, I felt that the Persiana would be something, first of all, which had an inside and an outside, which is what the play required, indoor and outdoor scenes. So rather than create a little garden or create something, I had a persiana which would you would light from different directions to give different effects. That was one. The second thing was it was a symbol of, we traditionally associate the persiana with gossip and with whispering. So that was something which helped as well. And it was Maltese, something, it was immediately recognizable. But if you do look at the set, it's a bit small over there, obviously you can't see. But all it was opening and closing large louvers as high as the set, and plain panels, no paintings, no, a little bit of furniture, but otherwise no decoration. Anyway, I don't know if that maybe is a little start.
Peter, would you like to answer the same question regarding the method of... You can use...
Is that working?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It's exactly as you just said. I mean, you start out with the talking to the director, and you read the script. Usually get the script first, then you talk to the director. And then you... Well, I usually say how much money you've got to spend here. and then you realise how little it is and how much you've got to do. And you then try to, within your budget, to create something, them having told you. And then sometimes you can push a director a little towards your design, or sometimes you can't, mind you. You try to create something for them within the budget, but also trying to, I suppose, lift the standard of theatre, because at one time when I first started in the theatre, everything had to be very realistic. Am I too far away from that?
Yeah.
Everything had to be realistic, and every moulding. And then when I very first started in the theatre, I mean, it was painted scenery, painted doors, painted mouldings, whereas now you don't have to do that. And a painting is the whole of theatre has changed over the year, and it's changing in front of our eyes. You know, nowadays you can have an abstract set. You can have people don't expect to see the windows, the doors, the kitchen, but you still have to create that illusion, because that's part of the... But it can be an illusion now. People can... live with that now. Years ago they couldn't, or they didn't. Theatre, as I say, has changed.
Arthur?
Do you find it hard creating an abstract set for a historical play?
Well, yes and no. It's a... I don't know how to answer that quite. You start out by saying, no, I do, usually, honestly, you know, I think I would rather approach this. I'm having to do that now, funnily enough. I'm doing 1565, I've got the right date. I keep on getting it wrong. and that I'm not attempting to do the fortifications. Well, I can't, the size they are, but I'm hoping to try and create... And it's a very complicated story. We move around like a rattlesnake, you know. I mean, we're in everywhere. Hoping to create the feel of the fortifications here, and the way people lived without actually building too much, and with a bit of artist's license.
You'd concentrate more on the mood, I guess, than the actual architectural features.
Yes, I mean, we can't do cannons, and we can't... All the things that... I'm telling you that because that's such a period thing. I haven't done very many period things here.
So you suggest, because obviously there's...
That's right, yes. And I think that's a designer's job, to put your audience... in the mood of the thing.
Yes.
If it's a ballet, it's another thing again. You create for the dancers, you know.
Yes.
If it's a children's thing, then you give them what children imagine, if you know, or you try to, you know.
You play with colours and lights.
Yes, colours especially. Yeah, well, they are for me. I like, in actual fact, I like starting out of choice, with a black background. I don't know why. It's because it's sort of It's a good thing. For me, it's good. Oh, I like starting either with all white or all black.
Like a blank canvas.
Sort of like a blank canvas, yeah.
But when coming up with the design, I mean, how do you both start? I mean, do you start with sketches and then you develop the idea, or you show it first to the director and then see if you're going the right way or not? Or
Yes, you do scribbles. I mean, it's all according to how many acts you've got, but do little, well, for myself, I do them, and then I work out sort of whether I can do it before I show them anything. Otherwise, you show them something. I try to show them a model as well as a sketch, because a sketch can lie, because you can paint a pretty picture, and then it comes to actually making it, and you can't do it in the space. I was brought up like that in films. You can't build forever, so you build perspectives and things. And so really, you start out that way. You start out with a basic idea, you present it, and they say, oh, well, I wasn't thinking it was going to be like that at all. I thought it was going to have a kitchen there and a door there. And you have to say, well, you can either have the door or you can have the kitchen. It's a process, yes. And it is give and take, a lot of it, or should be. I mean, it isn't always, but it should be.
Adrian, what about, is that the same method that you use, or do you work in a different way?
No, it would be the same. I think the first process is always the thought, is always seeing how it's going to work. First of all, the director will need your sketches to block, because he needs to block his actions on stage. So, okay, before you actually come down to planning and to give plans and whatever, you really have to make sure that he has enough space to work. He might need... you might break up everything into small areas which are unworkable because he's got a large crowd scene or something, you see. So yes, it's basically sketches. I like to make models as well. I've never got anyone back. But yes, that would be the process. I wanted to say something actually about, because Peter mentioned something about the budgets, and I think that's well, sometimes it's okay, because you know, really, you know, you have to work within a budget on this island. Myself, I'm quite a minimalist lately, and I like the challenge of having to work with a low budget. And I found a solution to this. In summer, I was asked to make a set for a production at university, and since it was university and precincts and all this, I said, I know what's going to happen. There's nothing as a budget. So they said, we can do it anywhere around university. So I took a little walk around university, and instead of designing the set, I chose it. It was there. It was for a Greek play, Aristophanes. It was Clouds last summer. And there it was, Richard England's building. The set had to be a philosophy school, and next door, the house of Strepsiades. And it was all there. It was a Greek metropolis, steps and all, and a nice light blue structure at the top for our philosophy school. And it cost them nothing, except the seating, which they thought was expensive as well. And the advantage was that they could start rehearsals from day one, which was a good thing. Maybe that was an extreme case.
Elaine, would you like to?
How far does it influence you, like the whole package of the theatre where you're going to be working? For example, the historical aspect, or the class of people which are going to be attending the theatre, or maybe previous experiences which you have had in the theatre?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think. I don't think you work for an audience. It's true that every theatre has its own audience. That's very true. If you put up a play at the Manuel, you know what people are. So normally a director or a theatre company would choose the venue because they know basically what audience they're going to get. Other than that, no, I don't think you're designing for a for an audience, really.
What about the historical aspects of the theatre? For example, the Manuals, it's got a specific, it's Baroque, it's...
Yes, but remember, the theatre is a suspension of belief. So, no, I wouldn't say that the Manual Theatre makes you design in a certain way. There are the constraints, yes. For example, if you're working at other theatres, there are the limitations of, I don't know, backstage space or things like that. So you have to design in a certain way. But physical limitations, I don't think contextual would make a difference, no.
Well, I would just like to add one thing there. In actual fact, you don't have a proper theatre here. I'm sorry to say that. You have theatres, but you don't have wings. The Manual is the nearest thing to a good theatre. It has its limitations in viewing for the audience. It's a beautiful theatre. Please don't think I'm criticising the theatre. But it has its limitations, and quite a lot of them as well. And the MCC has more, because that has no wings whatsoever. I mean, 6 foot one side and 7 foot the other. A lot of seats, and a lot of area for lighting. But it was built as a conference hall, of course, which everybody forgets. You can put things on there, but it's a whole package of difficulties to start with. In a way, I sort of enjoy it because it is so difficult. And it reminds me of films because it's like widescreen, which is took us years to get used to designing something that a letterbox shape when we'd been half of our lives designing for a picture type shape. And of course, that theatre is CinemaScope, but with no wings. Very, you can fly, but with great difficulty. And I think the Manual, that is a better theatre, but you don't have huge wings there.
Mm-hmm.
We're here, I should say, shouldn't I?
Do you ever like take the architectural features and use it in your sets, for example, and sort of make it instead of you break away the division of the stage and the spectator space at all, or do you?
Well, no, there's theatre in the round. You have, there's theatre in the round, which is one thing. I mean, and there's the open air theatres, which is another. And there are the two theatres here. There are other, there's schools, I know, as well. You design within what you're told we're going to put it on at this theatre, so you have to design something to go in that theatre. You don't choose your theatre. But basically, when the curtain comes back, or maybe the curtains, you leave it for the play open all the time, that is a window once the lights go out. That's a window for your scene. The theatre is just the ambience, the beauty of the place you're in. I mean, it does really matter. Where do you think? I don't think it matters where you put it. Do you?
No. The only thing is, maybe came to mind. But yes, sometimes, for example, at the Manuel Theatre, we have used the balconies. Yes, as part of the set, you know,
yes,
use them as. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, and we use the theatre at the MCC. We use the balconies, and people walking in to sometimes bring the audience into it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to try and work in the open air theatre there, there's only two doors to get off that. Two doors, not much wider than this, with a flight of steps immediately inside. So there's only one way off. You can't take scenery on or off. And a drop, yes, a big drop. So it's not a practical theatre, other than it's a nice stage with a good auditorium.
Yes.
And a beautiful view. But it's not a theatre.
Okay. Regarding the relationship you have with the director, is it very common for you to be sort of, you know, the director sort of basically tells you exactly what he wants and gives you certain freedom, or do you have a lot of freedom with your work? And do you work with the actors, for example, whilst creating the set? Or is it very much a sort of,
you know, you do your own thing, they do their own.
You can answer that. You want that do half of it. You do one half, not the other.
I'll do the good part.
Yeah.
Well, working with the actors, no. I don't think I've ever been involved with working with the actors in designing the set, no. So it's always been working with the director. Obviously, there are extremes. At the lowest extreme, you get the director who just wants his set and wouldn't even bother to discuss it and say, yeah, I want a set, yeah. And okay, shall we meet? No, it's okay, just, you know, do it and, you know. At the other end of the scale, you'll have a director who will be in continual discussion, and as Peter said, you would it would evolve even during rehearsals. During rehearsals, you might change a whole structure of part of a set, especially if you're dealing with an open theatre or a theatre in the round. So. What was the question again?
But you work with the directors and the actors.
Yes. Okay. I think there's different directors will be involved to different degrees in a production, and I think it doesn't depend on the production. It depends on the director. It depends how used the director is to being involved in a set or not. That's the way I've found out.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. The actors only come in when you've built the set. I mean, you build the set with the actors in mind, and when you built the set, they say, oh well, I can't walk down those steps, I mean, or they're too steep to go up, or the door's not big enough, and you think, well, it was big enough for me, but they say it's not big enough. It's them that's got to act in it.
Yes.
And so I think that's where you meet the actors, and you do automatically meet the actors and actresses as you're working, and then they'll say, well, I can't really get on that bed. But mostly, if you gave them a 4-foot bed in an area, they'd manage. Most actors and actresses really do manage, sometimes on something so difficult. It's only in a comedies are the most difficult, is when they've got to fall off something or fall over something or fall through something, because then that has to be at a specific height, and you have to make sure you don't break their neck or fall down. I did a play for Tony, I've forgotten what it was called now, but it was falling downstairs and, oh gee, what was it called? I've forgotten the play. And it was falling down the stairs and over balconies, and it was a comedy. Noises off. And it was full of gags, and the doors had to move both ways, and once someone had to hide in a door, and then you had to see people. That, of course, you have to do it with the actors. You design it, and then they say, well, I can't run up there and come. It's quite right. And so, therefore, you change it. Or sometimes you cross a director who will want to change something, not all, just one or two, who will want to change something that's not practical. Because when you design a set, you design a set to work for the actors or dancers, and you design things to, you have to get stuff on and off the stage, or you leave it somewhere on the stage to create your next scene. And some directors don't always understand that, how difficult that is to do, because you designed one thing and then now you're going to put it that way. And that is sometimes a difficulty, but you talk it out, mostly.
Rehearsals?
Yes, I do, as it happens, yeah.
Before you actually have the concept of what the set is going to be like?
I like to be there, I'm retired, so I can be there as much as I want. I like to be there all the time, because if something goes wrong, you can say, oh, well, that's why I've done it. But, of course, if you've got another job, as most people have on these islands, you know, they do two or three jobs. And so it's difficult to get your people all together. In fact, we've just done a thing and the whole cast were rehearsing at different times. No, they weren't all together until the last week or so, that's a ballet, but nevertheless, it's quite difficult to all rehearse your bits without the other people. And these are things that, I don't know whether that's sidetracking, but yeah.
Also, yeah.
Actually, I was thinking about that set up there. I think it's Mr. Marbles, right?
No, oh, no, that one there.
The Secret Garden.
The Secret Garden.
That's
yes.
yours.
Well, I was. Yes, it is. Uh-huh. I was going to do it in England. That started in England. Then I was going to do it here. And then I redid it. And then the people that were talking to me about it didn't do it. And then I've lost half the sketches. That's all that's left. And that was going to be done with the Gauls because it goes through. I read the book, then saw the film, and the film was so beautiful. I loved it, the way it went through the seasons, and I wanted to try and do that with gauzes. That's how that happened. But whether it ever happens...
And even speaking about films, I know that you worked on films. Do you find a difference between theatre, set design for theatre, and set design for films? Which do you prefer?
Both, well, I spent an awful lot of time in films. I actually prefer theatre. I don't think it pays as well. I actually, it's a very hard question, John, because in the end, I enjoyed films. I didn't want to be in it, and I didn't want to go into them at all in the beginning, and I wanted to be in the theatre. But as I say, it was paying so badly. And, I was wooed into films, a slow process, but I learned such a lot from some sensational people, but you do have fantastic budgets, but then you have to build huge things, you know, and it also has to be within a budget, and some films collapse because the designs and the story is too big for the budget. But it's the same, it's designing. It's still designing. You still have to design it. You're designing this big instead of this big. I'm trying to simplify it down, but that's the thing. The thing that I learned most on, I've been asked this a lot of times over the years, is where did I learn most? And I have to tell you, it was on the Carry On films. And I'm not trying to tell a story. I'm just trying to tell you how it happened. I just got a nomination and come back from the nomination, and there was no work, no work at all. And I needed work, I needed money. And the only thing that was going at this particular time and the film industry had stopped was the Carry On films, and their budget is minimal. And they are the most marvellous people. They're all like theatre people. They all come from the theatre. They're all hoofers. You know, they dance and they sing, and people like Hattie Jakes. They were and Kenneth Williams. They were all characters in themselves. Now they were all very professional, very, 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 and they would. There was hardly one of the Carry On people that wasn't in a play somewhere, or in a comedy somewhere, or doing a stand-up comic turn somewhere, or radio. They were all in different things, and we would be bussing people in and out because we could only afford them for so many weeks for making the film. But what I'm really saying is, on that low budget, if you were filming, like we were filming one day, an army camp, and in the script it said a tank. Well, I couldn't hire a tank from anybody. I couldn't get one. But firstly, I couldn't afford the lorry to bring the tank there. So while I was out trying to find a way of getting a tank, I came back into the studios, and they said, oh, well, we shot it, Peter. So I said, what do you mean we shot it? They said, well, go and look at the set. I went into the set, which was an army barracks, and there was a Ford, and it said, there was a notice in front of it that said, Peter couldn't get the tank. And that's how they worked. I mean, if you were supposed to get a Baroque chair and you spent all day looking for a Baroque chair, you'd find they'd use an ordinary chair like this. I mean, so it taught you to always get something, have some prop or some design, and not, you know, become spoiled and think, I must have it like this. Because if they'd shoot on anything, and it worked because the comics were the... held the scenery together, if you see what I mean, what was lacking. That's the only reason I'm telling that story, is that why I learned to cough up the goods for a certain budget. I think that's possibly why I like it here, because it comes to the same thing. Yes. Don't you think? Mm. No. I hope that answers it. But
now, regarding theatre design in Malta, I'm Adrian, what's the situation? How difficult is it to be a set designer in Malta? I mean, like you said, are there obstacles? I mean, is it very difficult to work as full time, for example? Can you dedicate all your time to something like that?
I doubt it. I don't think so. I don't think anybody could. Peter might afford to do it, but...
No, I'm retired. That's why I can afford to do
exactly.
it. You've answered it, in actual fact. Everybody does 2 and 3 jobs here,
yeah.
Which I find... I used to find horrendous, but... I've got used to it now, I suppose. But it is quite true. You go when you're doing a show here, you say, oh, you can't have them because they don't come in because they're at the hospital. And you can't have them because they work, you know, till 4 o'clock. Or you can have them at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's a huge amount of that goes on when you're trying to build stuff here with people that are doing other jobs. They still do it. And I do think your audacity to start out by saying you're going to build something as big as this, for instance, and you say, well, if you've got £20 to spend, you know, and you find you've got no workers, where are you going to get the workers from? And these are obstacles you have here. And secondly, I don't think with the money you have to spend here, you could live on. To be honest,
I think that the first factor is that a production lasts 1 weekend or 2 weekends. Therefore, there's so much money that a production can spend on their costumes and on their scenery. Now, there are some companies who are quite generous and say, I don't care, I'm going to spend as much as it takes to have a good set or to have good costumes. They'll spend thousands of pounds. But that's not the norm. That's one. Secondly, is that I think most people would not want to spend a lot of money on a set designer. They would not, because probably our standards aren't so high anyway. One of the most successful in terms of business musical, which was held at Catholic Institute, I won't mention, which ran for about 12 nights. I won't mention. It's not yours.
Wish
don't
you
worry.
Wish you would.
But the set. There was no set. There was no set. It wasn't designed. It just didn't exist. But it ran for 12 evenings. It was advertised for 3. Then another 3, and another 3. And that's a production, I think, which, this was about maybe 3 years ago, made tens of thousands of pounds in profit. But nobody would say, oh, you know what was wrong? They didn't have a good set. So our standards are not all that high. Obviously, there are people who would be looking out and saying, oh, yes, that was a good job, or that wasn't a good job. But in the main, I don't think so. So a lot of people would not say, oh yes, I think I can afford to dedicate this much money to having something really good. I don't think that's going to be the case. So again, there's another thing about different, obviously, companies have their preferred designers, which might change over the years. I mean, I've done sets for MADC, I've done sets for Tony, for individual companies, for some dance companies. But normally you'd have a period of time for Acting House. You'd find a period of time where you're working with a particular company. And, you know, it's almost a bit awkward to be working for 3 companies at the same time. That's what I find, or that's how people interpret it. And therefore, maybe a company will make, I don't know, 2 productions a year or 3. I mean, So it's still, even if you were full-time and you were well paid for that, it's not going to sustain a living, definitely.
Hang on, we have a question. Yes.
When there's a review of a performance and you don't get mentioned or no one criticizes your set, when your set played a very important role in the performance, how do you feel? Did it ever happen?
It happens sometimes, yes, that it's not mentioned.
No, that someone mentions something.
Mentions, oh yes. Normally there's always a crit about the set, yes. And I think it's obviously you take the criticism, I think. I normally find that the crits are normally quite, I like the crits. Earlier this year, I did at the Manuel, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and it was a very austere set. I don't know if you saw that. I have some drawings there if you'd like to see them. And it was a very clinical set. It was a play about a marital breakdown, and these people literally have destroyed everything about their own lives, and therefore the set was purposely empty. It was plain. The only thing they had to show for all their history was hundreds of whiskey bottles in the front of the stage. There was somebody who wrote and said, the main crit was nice, I think he understood, but there was a crit a couple of months later which said there was a starkingly empty set, and in brackets, too empty, we thought. So, but that's interpretation. I think in the main, if you do try to do something about a set, it's normally quite well received, I think.
Well, I personally think that you don't actually design for the critics, I have to tell you. I deliberately don't design for the critics. I think people should be allowed. I don't mind criticism. Sometimes I agree, and I sometimes think, oh, I wish I'd had enough money to do that, or I wish I had made that bigger or smaller or less fussy, or it goes through your mind and you think, well, I won't be doing that again. But you can't let the critics control. You have to come up with an idea and do it. It's no good waiting for someone else and thinking what they're going to say about you. You just have to live with that, what they're going to say. And it's one of the jobs. You have to put something on paper. It's one thing. Imagining something, it's an entirely separate thing to put it on paper. And once you put it on paper, you then have to try and make it. And it doesn't always work. And you're not always right. You can try, but I mean, possibly the longer you go on working, more right you are. But the critics can pick on something. In fact, I had a film once, and it was a solicitor's office. Well, it was quite a good film, but this critic said it had crushing good taste. Yeah, I didn't mean it to be crushing good taste. I meant it to be like the solicitor. Everything was neat and new and clean, and the books were all in beautiful toning colours. So the set was, but this particular critic thought that it was crushing good taste. It was just simple. So I couldn't actually defend myself on that, but it happens. And I had one person, maybe I shouldn't say it, I have a critic here who actually says she doesn't like, I shouldn't have said that, but doesn't like me. Well, that doesn't really matter. What she should do, or they should do, is criticize the work, not me. If I wore a pink hat, it's got nothing to do with the drawings. You criticize what? Is that correct, do you think? But you have to put it down on paper and make your mistakes, I'm afraid, which we do.
I like your pink hat.
But regarding, I mean, the situation more time, do you think that they do put enough emphasis on the set design? The audience who come watch it, the director, the critics, Do you think there is enough emphasis on that?
Well, I think really and truly your set is there to complement. So I remember once Maurice Jarre, who received an award for his music for Dr. Zhivago, accepted his reward very reluctantly and said, "This award means that I have failed," he said, "because my music is not there to be noticed, it's there to complement the film." He was being modest, but anyway. And I think theatre design is also, in a way, that's what we're meant to do. I don't think we're meant, well, obviously if you're doing a musical and it's lavish, it's nice to have everyone go, "Oh, what a lovely set," and I think that's the way it is. In theatre, I don't know, it depends on the type of theatre. If you're doing serious theatre or something like that, then it's different. You don't really want to overpower. It's meant to emphasize. It's meant to emphasize what the play is trying to do, what the director is trying to do. I just mentioned a couple of years back, I did a set at the St. James Theatre. It was a two-hander. It was the open couple, and it was basically again about husband and wife who have decided that they need to take a break and do some swinging anyway. But it was basically about this man and this woman, and they were on opposite sides of each other, and therefore I created a catwalk which basically went across from one corner to the other corner. It was a high catwalk, and it was there because it was a very private thing, but it was being exposed to all the public, so a catwalk. And it had two poles. They had to pass by very uncomfortably. The director used the poles to separate the actors. And it was a very particular set, and therefore, yes, it was mentioned and people did. But hopefully it didn't detract from the fact that what we were trying to do was to have, you know, the blocking of the actors move in a certain way. That's why it was there. Nobody said, "Oh, that was a lovely set." But the general comment, which I enjoyed, was that, "Oh yeah, it worked," you know, because the... So I think people do recognize scenery in one way or another. You know, if it's a musical, then it's meant to be lavish, and therefore yes, people do notice it in a different way, you know.
Yes, that's absolutely right, because you I've worked on one or two operas in England, and each time people you go to hear the singer, and you don't want your scenery coming in front of your singer and or actor come to that, and so sometimes you play the scenery down, and sometimes the criticism is, "Well, we didn't notice the scenery." It's quite hard not to sell yourself sometimes and literally do nothing. In fact, it's very difficult, because when you're asked to do something, you want to do something, and then if you can manage with just the platform, it's almost good to do that. If the actor is, or actress or singer, is good enough to hold that, and sometimes, but for pantomimes or things, you need the glamour, you need the twinkle, you need, that's a separate type of design, almost a separate type of designing. It's more, it's quite fun. I mean, you know, to, you know, sort of Disneyland, you know. But it's nice for it's more fun for the designer sometimes. But it's quite an achievement when you can do very little and tell the story. That's more or less what you were saying. Yeah. But it's quite difficult to be minimal.
When it comes to quality over here, what is your opinion about the quality of set design? What do you think can help in sort of developing and helping those people who are interested in set design? What will help them learn more about, you know, what's the appropriate thing to do when it comes to designing a set? I mean,
okay, young people.
I would say that the most important thing, and this is maybe what would be interesting to see people who are coming up to do theatre design, would be to think. And the main, I think, process of the set design, if you are allowed to do it by your director, is to think, is to interpret your script, right? As we were saying before, it's very easy if you're doing a plain set. If you're doing, I don't know, that's Rebecca. It was a plain set. If you're doing a plain set, then it's very simple. You do your research, you see what period you're dealing with, you see what objects were around at the time, you see what patterns were around at the time, any motifs, colors. You work something which works for the blocking that the director wants to do, and that's it. If you're doing a ship, you have to research what type of portholes they had, etc., etc. But if you're allowed by your director to give something interpretive, then the most important thing is that you think, you talk, you challenge, you get your inspirations from everywhere. You know, rather than start with, if this is your project, you don't start from here. You start from all around. You know, you get ideas from everywhere. You get absurd ideas if needs be, and I'm just remembering a set which Derek Jarman had done, which was basically the inside of a dinosaur. So you know, you start from being wild, and so I think it's basically to read your script, to get to know it inside out, make the connections, you know, and see if you can convince your directors to do something different with your set, you know. And I think you need to obviously to challenge. The more discussions you have with your director, the better, you know.
Well, I agree. But were you asking about young people, though?
Yes, young people.
Thing is here is I often could do with help scenic painting, for instance. And unfortunately, as you get older, you develop a style, I suppose, and because it's the way you work. And if it's something... I used to have to paint realistically in the film industry. Well, not realistically, because it had to be look realistically to the camera. So I instinctively, when it comes to painting scenery, can paint quite realistically with very little amount of painting, because that was something I had to be taught, as it were, by painting in the film industry and in the theatre. From something that's going to be seen over there. You can waste your time on something, but it's to know what you waste your time on. Well, that's one kind of scenery. And then there's which youngsters could actually, in fact, learn to do that. And I also think there's another thing here. You don't have I'm sure there are, but I possibly just don't know them, very good props made. You can't get very good props made of telephones or everyday things. They're always a bit made of cardboard, and they're not made to look for real. It doesn't matter whether what you make them out of, but they should look like what they are. This is something that tomorrow's students should be learning how to paint. It doesn't mean it has to be realistic. Do you know what I'm saying? There is no training school here for theatre. Which I think it's a great shame, because it is one of the only thing is how can you persuade a student to train when you can't offer him a continuity of work? That's what I find a little bit upsetting here. And I would like to see that happening. Maybe one day there'll be schools here that, or a company that has a paint department, a model department, yeah, or teachers to teach, as well as acting. But your theatre doesn't have a huge... I think you do fantastically well here on such a small budget. I mean, the pantomimes and the plays, and I mean, you think there's a different play. You need money here, in actual fact, to go to the theatre. There's one here this week, there's another one there. I mean, I spend my time going to the theatre here. I don't have a weekend to myself. No, but you do attempt to do, you know... And I don't mean attempt, I think some of the things are very, very good. But with a little more money and a little more training from my side, the sets could be... Don't you think if there was... Yeah. I'm talking for younger people coming along, you know.
But there isn't a big enough market to sort of have a place where these students can go and train, because then they won't have the jobs to go to. There's not enough for them to work.
No, that's right. But funnily enough, I'm using the people that do the carnival. Now, they have a specific way of doing their props. They have a lot of knowledge of what they can do with paper mache. They're very, very clever. But it's a style. It's its own style. Up if you talk to me. I don't mind. they have their own style, but they have a lot of talent there, which I find if they could only channel it away and into the theatre a bit, they're nearly there with it. But they go back into orange paint and lemon paint with a drop of a hat, and I don't mean that.
They're very adventurous.
They are, but it's not used here. They should be used in other directions. Yeah. I feel they're wasted, to be honest with you. I don't say... I think that's all I can say about that, to be honest with you.
Do you see that maybe from the new scenographers, the up-and-coming scenographers here in Malta? Is there any hope?
Well, of course. I mean, God, if you can't live without hope. I mean, when I started out, I couldn't get a job anywhere, and I'd had a long training at the college, and there was just no work. And I just go around trying to get a job as a designer, which was impossible. You can't start at the top, you have to start at the bottom. And so I had to, the only job I could get was scene painting. And so I went to work for a monstrous man called, God, he was unpleasant. Years later, he had to work for me. I gave him such a bad time. But he was horrible when, mind you, I must admit, if there was a pot of paint, I'd fall over it. But I had to start out like that, having had a long training. And I think that I came home many a night and said to my mother and said, I can't get a job anywhere, you know, in tears and things. And slowly you make it. I don't think it's terrible to say to some poor little artist who's just starting out, there's no work, you're never going to do it. But even if you have to lie, tell them, I mean, it's terrible to start this, nip this bud off, just because there isn't work here. Maybe one day there will be. Or now you're into the common market. I mean, who's to know that you can't go abroad and then come back again? All right.
Are there any questions from the audience at all?
Yes.
We're
observing digital music, digital art, digital... Everything is digital. Are you inspired or are you influenced by this new media as digital in your set design?
You answer that, I want to.
Before I answer that, I'll ask you, who are the new scenographers? Because I'm hardly seeing any. I mean, I don't know. When you asked that question, I was thinking to myself, who are these people? at the beginning of the season, I don't know if there was the first MADC play,
got criticized for having no set designer. In fact, I think it had no set designer. It was just a constructed set which had no design. It probably came from a direction on the script, and they got criticized for that. And so I don't know where they are. It was the first one of the season, comedy over here. So I don't know. In fact, I'm quite curious. I mean, I'm very curious. Obviously, if I go to a production, the first thing I do is look up the set designer. But I wouldn't know. I mean, it would be very interesting. It would be very interesting to see who's doing the design.
There's no kind of, anything kind of training that you can do. To get into it. So it's very much, even if you're interested in it, it's very difficult to get into because you don't know how to learn. So it's a dead end from the start.
Yes, maybe, I think, probably, yes. It would be harder for somebody to start now because the expectations are high. So,
About Western theatre, not having a set design. I think set design is very intrinsic to Western theatre. I think it's banal not to have a set design. There has to be, sure, the actor can suggest certain things, but just to be blank, doesn't go.
Yeah, I think every director should insist that he has. And I forgot your question now.
Are you influenced by digital media?
Oh.
Because I never saw someone, a set with digital media, like video projections or 3D.
Well, they're very expensive. If I may come in on that, any technical thing you come in, like if you want projections here, costs a lot of money. Say you want projectors, back projectors. Firstly, you can only use back projection here because it's a deep stage. It's an old-fashioned stage, but it's a very good stage for that. At the MCC, you can't project because you have to have the projector in the middle of the theatre, and then you lose something like 30 seats because it's so noisy, the fan on it. That's projection-wise. I actually like working with projections, but it just doesn't work here. Because here it could work and has worked. I think in Amadeus they did some very nice things. I've just worked on a production, I might add, that we put it all into the computer. It's the Alison White show, I might as well say, I'm done with it. We spent 2 days lighting it and blocking it, well, nearly 3 days in actual fact, and the machine went wrong, and we lost everything. Everything. And I went hysterical. And they then got us another machine, was brought in from somewhere. That also went wrong. That wasted, now we're getting 1 day before the show. And we finally found that it had a virus, which was going from computer. I'm a bit off computers since then, but I mean, the third time we blocked it, but we had to do it from 7 o'clock in the morning, till 7 o'clock at night, and the show had no lit rehearsal at all. And so Alison went on having never danced and never been able to go in and out of spotlights. They had, because there was no time for doing it. And that is working. I've done several things here with digital things, and I don't think you're advanced enough in it here, if you don't mind me. Maybe I'm saying the wrong thing, but I really don't. I mean, I think these things require a lot of training. I would like to see it, mind you. I mean,
Well, I remember once we did a play and just had some projections at the back, but they were so bad. The projectors were very weak. The screen had to be very small, and it wasn't really worth the effort, I think. So, yeah, maybe I would agree.
Yeah, I did the same on a thing, the Bond thing, because we didn't have enough money to do painted scenery. or cutouts or anything. I thought, well, we'll do projections because I can paint those and we project. We tried putting the projector all over the theatre as if it was the first time it had ever been done. We hung it from here, we hung it from there, and we still, because if you're projecting and you put lights on the stage, however the distance you need of darkness for the slide, you cut it out as you're going through it and you lose it. I still like to do it, but I haven't found a way. I'm afraid myself here.
I think, though, I did see a production. It wasn't a production. It was Tony Attard's presentation, his final, which was very good. It was an experimental piece. Mm. The projections worked beautifully. They were front projections. But I've never worked on such an experimental production. It's always normally either a play, which would be established in an established theatre, so.
Yes. A bit different. But you can do it here.
I suppose you could work it with limited means if it's that type of production, yeah.
Can I ask another question? Do you consider smell and soundscapes in your design? Like, would you introduce smells, the smelling and the ears and the sounds, or just visually there?
Actually, there's an exhibition in England about smell, sound. It's at the Royal College, I think, but they tried. You walk through room after room with all these experiences. And they were talking of putting it into a theatre. I think they tried to do it on a film once too, in America, pump perfume into the air and things, you know. I'm all for trying whatever is new. I mean, I think it's a good idea to do different things so that your audience sit up and are surprised, if you can think of something. I'm getting a bit past it for thinking of anything, but I think if you can really think of something. I'm a great believer in theatre is the senses. I mean, you should, if it's a glamorous thing, you should sit back on your heels and think, Jesus, doesn't that twinkle, you know? Or if it's earthy, it should be so earthy you should be able to feel it. But that is our job. That's our job, to try and do that with. But you can't have. I've never seen it in the theatre ourselves, smell and sound. I think someone has tried it somewhere, I'm sure, possibly Spielberg.
Well, sound, yes, because, I mean, sometimes if you have to create, I don't know, a garden scene in the middle of nowhere, then yes, you would throw a light gobo with a leaf pattern and you'd have birds chirping away. I mean, sound, I think, is used all the time, even as a substitute for a set. A train going by, for example, you know? So, yes. Smell, I've never gotten to that. There are a lot of awful smells in the theatre, but to project out onto the audience, I don't know, that's never tried it.
Any other questions? No? Okay, so we'll finish here. Just to remind you that the next event organised by Theatre Traffic will be on the 12th January, and it will be a work in progress of the collective creation of a performance done by the theatre studies students. We also want to remind you that we still have a petition for the Royal Opera House site. If you'd like to sign it, it's over. You can speak to Elaine. That's it, basically. Thank you very much. And thank you to Adrian and Peter. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you. Thank you.
Campus FM has just presented Theatre Traffic, a series of discussions organised by students of theatre studies in the Mediterranean Institute, coordinated by Dr. Vicky Ann Cremona.